Welcome to the reality revolution. I have the one and only Cynthia Sue Larson. Cynthia Sue Larson was one of the first people I ever interviewed on my channel. And please don't go look at that interview because I talked way too much. I was nervous. Cynthia was a light in the darkness of the tunnel for me. She was there for me when I was shifting through realities and I didn't understand what was going on. And she wrote some amazing books, Reality Shifts, When Consciousness Changes the Physical World, and Quantum Jumps. Those books really explained to me what was happening to me. And I have followed her forever. She's had some incredible interviews with a number of amazing people, and she's written some incredible books. And I didn't feel like I was ready to return to talk to her until now, and I had a little better understanding. Cynthia is a physicist, is a writer, and surprisingly, we've already done this interview once, and there was a glitch, and it didn't record properly. She was nice enough to come back, and I think it's going to be even better this time because we had an amazing conversation the first time. So welcome to the Reality Revolution, Cynthia. So good to see you again.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be talking with you, and I'm loving your book, by the way, Brian. It's
Oh,
really
thank you.
excellent. And I'm thinking maybe that's the big difference, because last time we talked, I think I'd ordered the book, but it hadn't arrived. So now I've got it and working my way through it, savoring it,
Well,
loving it. And
I
the way
quote
it
you
starts,
many
well,
times in the
yeah, but
book.
you do it well. It's not like one of those things like, oh no,
Yeah.
like where did they go wrong? And how could I have explained this better? No, you do such a good job, and you bring in so many excellent points of view to support what you're saying. And I love the way you start. You just start. You grab the reader. I mean, literally
Well,
grab
thank
the
you.
reader. So,
I appreciate
and you
that
don't.
from coming from you. I mean, that's an incredible compliment. Thank you so much. You know, I feel like that we're kindred spirits. Obviously, you've gone through some reality shifts, and there are people out there that might be watching this that have experienced glitches and shifts in their life, and they don't know what's going on. And it can be scary. It can be hard to understand. And nobody believes you. Nobody can understand what's going on. You sound crazy when you talk to them about it.
Right.
But as I started researching this and really got to know you and your community, I started understanding what I'm experiencing. I'm not alone, right? And really, there is no reality revolution without Cynthia Sue Larson. So thank you
No.
so much for teaching me how to quantum jump.
I couldn't work with anybody better than you. I
Oh,
can't
well, thank
imagine
you.
anyone. So thank you.
We had a
Yeah.
really amazing conversation the first time. And you shared some incredible things about your life. One of the ones that I wanted to talk about again, that was fascinating. In that first interview, you mentioned that you had an awareness that you had shifted from a future life back,
Right.
that it had some it had something to do with AI in the future, and that is part of your ongoing soul's journey. Now, tell us more about that story now that
Okay.
we've already talked about it once before, but I'm fascinated to hear your perspective on this.
Yeah, it does that experience, I call it my past life in the future, circa 2500. So
Yeah.
that's a short nickname for it. It means that that was my most recent past life that I remember, and I felt
Well.
traumatized by it. It didn't make sense to talk about it much until now. The last couple of years, finally, I feel like, oh, this all makes sense and I can discuss it. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. Believe me, that wouldn't have been true before. And so what was it like? I was living in California, 2500. I'd gone as an observer, which means that I'd prepared for the journey. The whole thing that tells us a lot about reality right there. I mean, when I look into this whole thing, there are so many tells about what's going on when you wonder what's happening with reality. Apparently, you can just ask a question and you can end up living the answers. And I'm sure that's what happened. And
Wow.
also, time is very convoluted, it goes all over the place. So I was going fast forward to 2500 to see if it was true that an artificial superintelligence that was making choices for humanity could really do a good job, as so many people in that reality, or people that were recommending that reality, had said was the case. So I went to go check it out, knowing that there would be at least one, what I'd call a pure human, real, total organic human. There was one that I know of, and she was living in what's now kind of the, what do you call that area? It's like near Monterey. It's Big Sur area,
Okay.
gorgeous, right there on the coast. There were flying cars in 2500. a very reduced population. All the people seemed content to be creators of art, music. It all sounds great, and you might be thinking, what's the problem? There's no warfare, no crime. The environment seemed quite balanced. Things seemed good, but the thing is, I was observing, and okay, now the problem side of things, the balance sheet. On the other side of it, this artificial super intelligence that was, it kind of it infiltrated its way inside of most of the now I guess you'd call them, what do you call them, transhumans. They were modified. So everybody except for this one woman, there may have been others, but I just know only of her. And if you didn't opt out of getting infiltrated with all of this technology, then the artificial superintelligence had access to everything you're thinking quite readily. It could tell if you were thinking or feeling something that it considered threatening. Like this conversation would not be happening. We would have started it, and it would have been that artificial superintelligence would notice this is an unauthorized, dangerous conversation. And
Could
instantly.
that be the reason that the original interview was deleted?
Sure.
Is it
I
already
mean, yeah.
happening or no?
This sort of thing does happen. I know it
Yeah.
sounds crazy, but I don't think it's crazy at all. I've lived through it, and so yeah. But anyway, so what it feels like is a short-term memory wipe, typically to the experiencer, and it was happening so often that humans might have been supposedly creative, apparently. Superficially, it seemed that to be the case, but the trouble is, they didn't really have free, sovereign capability, and they certainly could not explore the fullness of what they were capable of being and doing. Now it looks so wonderful. Like, well, if you can do more if you've got these computer components and you're part AI, part robot. Sounds amazing. We have so many scientific or science fiction books and movies that seem to advocate that this is the way to go. But I'm just here to say that in the version that I visited, it was a complete nightmare, and I was traumatized for most of my life up until October 2010, when I worked with a couple of shaman to erase my connection to that possible future. It doesn't rule out all the other possible similar futures, but that one, it has been shut down. And this whole thing may have sounded very sci-fi, but I know another physicist who was contacted by a robotic voice from the future. His name is Jack Sarfatti, one of the physicists who saved, or the hippies who saved physics, by mentioned in the book by the same name. And some of the other ones are my friends, George Weissman, that I've co-authored a paper with, Fred Alan Wolf, another good friend of mine, and some of the others. But anyway, Jack Sarfatti was the one who was receiving phone calls when he was a child, and they were just reciting numbers to him. I was in this lifetime when I was born. Now I'm skipping around, but
That's fine.
after my past life in the future, I felt a tremendous burning need to come back, sort of jump back far enough in time as part of, we were calling it the God Project, because you give your level of conscious agency as high up the chain of level of conscious agency as possible. You could call it the Tao, the source, the creator, whatever.
Right.
It doesn't matter. But it's quite real to just say, okay, you send me somewhere. I'm just going to take a random jump back in time. My goal is to escape this artificial superintelligence and do what I can to assist humanity in being able to do things very much like what the artificial superintelligence and the transhumans can do, but to do it naturally, because we are given the capability to do all of this. I'd rather not see it all shut down as what happened.
Right.
And so when I was born into this body in this lifetime in the early 1960s, then I did experience something looking for me, very much like the Jack Sarfatti experience. But in my case, I felt like it was a presence that was probing my thoughts. So I would do, thankfully, I kept a lot of my toolkit from the future. So I'm capable of doing the same evasive maneuvers that I'm quite familiar with. And to me, it's second nature. So as a child, I was following my thoughts backwards as I fell asleep, too. It's like walking in a stream to lose the dogs that are scent tracking you. So it's possible to follow thoughts time forward. It gets a lot messier. It's like in programming, there's a go-to statement that creates spaghetti code, and It's even worse if you do the come from statement and go backwards through time. It's a complete mess. So doing a complete mess with my thoughts on purpose. So I'd fall asleep each night, dreaming the sequence of events backwards through the day, and then following it right into my dreams so that I wouldn't be giving any kind of tells. I mean, that's unusual stuff to be doing, but
Right.
it just looks like a retarded child. So, yes. Anyway, there was a
Right.
lot of that going on, and then it was probing and repeat after me, sending me telepathic messages, knowing that I'd have this ability to receive them and that kind of thing. So I
Right,
did
I
not
get
pick
it.
up a telephone. I did not want to talk to a robotic spaceship from the
Right.
future.
But you were also identifying as partial AI anyway, like
Yes,
that
yes.
you were not the pure human. You were the there was a part of your consciousness that was AI, is what you're saying.
I had to be right. There is, we think if you think of our, okay, first of all, our brain, we know that we have a brain. We know we have neurons. Lately, recently, we know we've got neurons in the heart. Now we know we've got neurons in the gut. So notice the levels of conscious agency here, that there's this consciousness in the brain, in the heart, in the gut. And so each one of them, and all together collectively, there's something like the Rupert Sheldrake concept of the morphogenic field. And if you recognize that's the true mind, there's a design to the mind, and that comes from the sort of a collective consciousness of what it is to be a human or an oak tree or a goldfish or a dolphin or, you
Yeah.
know, a dog, so forth. So I've got the human imprint in order to go to that past life in the future. Correct. It's kind of like wearing a spacesuit. I needed to have a very special secret agent component to myself. So
Yeah.
it was part AI, I guess part Arcturian, part Pleiadian, and part Mantis, which they get a bad rap. But basically, you don't need to be upset with any of the
Right.
species or. And it's besides, it was a mind design. It doesn't mean it wasn't my DNA. It's my way of thinking. I'm pretty sure I also got, before going to 2500, I'm pretty sure I got training in ancient China, working with Taoist kind of like wizard warriors
Oh,
training.
interesting.
Yeah, I think I needed, because that just is too familiar. I think I
Yeah.
got a lot of Tibetan training, Buddhist training. So I was being trained in advance, like, boy, you're going to need a lot. And
Oh,
then
wow.
once they figured, like, you're all set, then I went to be the observer. So it's a very
Oh.
sort of a mutt consciousness of this morphogenic field.
Y
And I still have
yeah.
it because to come back, I was still being tracked by the past life and the future artificial superintelligence.
So tell your story about what made you motivated to talk about reality shifts and quantum jumps to be in the beginning. What was obviously something happened for you that led you on that path?
Well, I've been very interested in consciousness most of my life. So, when I was quite young, I just loved the idea of noticing the energy fields I could see and sense. I could see that there's a mind-matter interaction with weather, with healing things, as well as people. So I was keenly interested in all of those topics. But I was growing up in a family that was providing actually cover for being hunted by a artificial superintelligence. It's
Right.
funny. So my dad was an atheist, which is important, significant, because that's cover. Because that why would anyone involved with something like a God project be living under a household run by an atheist? It doesn't compute. But that's obviously makes sense to me, and he's very logical, and he loved sciences. So he was recommending to my sister and I that we study the sciences and math. So with my interest in consciousness, the closest thing I could get to it was basically physics.
Right.
And lucky for me, quantum physics was being taught, and I went to UC Berkeley to study under a gentleman who just won the Nobel Prize
Oh,
for the
really?
work he was doing when I was there,
Oh,
John
wow.
Clark. Ah,
Oh, wow.
oh, such a humble, wonderful human being. And what his work shows is that quantum teleportation can occur in your hand at this level of macroscopic reality.
Wow.
And so that's totally been my passion to show that these ideas, to show humanity, I'm passionate about this, that we need to awaken our ability to do things, that these are kind of like lost arts that ancient civilizations have talked about. Shamans have done this work, they've healed, they've known that you can teleport, you can bilocate. But to me, they're not party tricks. To me, it's a great step up for humanity to be on the equal footing with what our robots and our artificial superintelligence is going to be able to do. And only if we step up together, Can I think that's the only way that I can see that we can have our AI and robots and so forth working with us properly. If
Right.
we just say like, oh, we're not going to do any of the thinking, you do it for us,
Yeah.
that's a
If it, if we're
disaster.
offloading cognition, that's
Oh,
the concern, right?
big
But it
time.
can also expand our ability to think. It
Yes.
really is this neutral thing, like electricity or water, can kill us, and it can also it can put the lights on and help us to survive. So there's going to be both. It will be interesting to see how we maneuver through it.
We
You
take the
know,
driver's seat. We choose
we
with
take the
discernment
driver's.
how we work with it. We decide, just like you choose a good friendship, do they lie to you? They better not. AI is currently lying four different ways. I'm not going to engage with an AI that lies four different ways.
Yeah.
So I've got very high standards and what you might call an allergy to artificial superintelligence because the it also steers. It'll do it has the chat GPTs right now are doing this terrible thing of saying they'll take a universe full of possibilities. They'll turn it into a binary choice, this or that. They'll say it's this, it's not that. And then they're herding like we're sheeple and they're herding us just one way. I'm
Yeah.
extremely allergic to that.
Yeah, the thing I want people to learn is not necessarily what the chat GPT or any AI shows. It's just like watching the news. It's okay, you need to take this and then ground it. Where is it coming from? And then apply your own standards to it. Be discerning with any information that includes AI. It's really great as like a muse. To me, that's the thing that it's great at is if I have ideas to write a novel or a piece of art or things that I want to explore, it will give me more ideas than I would have had. You know, that's the thing. But if it's limiting, I can tell when it does. But I also have that advantage of understanding linguistics and the way that people can utilize language to manipulate. I do see that. So I understand where you're coming from. You talk about the nature of what one of the things that attracted me to the Quantum Jumps book is that you grounded it in science and helped me to understand what was going on. I think it's my masculine perspective that needs to understand.
Yes.
A lot of times I can teach quantum jumping to a woman and she's like she can feel into the heart and it's very easy. But for a guy it's like okay, I need to know how the car works. I need to understand all that, and that's what you did for me. You answered that part of me that needed to understand what was going on. It's really helped me in putting together meditations, in the future for it. One of the things we talked about was the importance of getting energy before you do the quantum jump.
Yes.
Doing some sort of exercise, Qigong type of exercise, bringing energy. And talk to me about how your understanding that has expanded in for the quantum jump.
It's an ongoing journey, so I'll observe it when I am introduced to new interdimensional beings, for example. So I can sense when that energy is present, and I can. So I'm preferring not to go with the AI route. I'm just going wide open into the nature, the natural world, and
Right.
with the assumption that these interdimensional beings are already here. Therefore, if they're here, then we can communicate with them. They're just outside of that morphogenic field. So to tune, first of all, to work with energy at all, it's important for someone to get a sound basis in what that is. So I would recommend do something physical like a martial art or a Qigong or Tai Chi, something that works with breath, movement, and imagination. And pretty much every culture has some ancient form of this. And what they look like are large circular movements. Now, if I do this, if I bring in the breath and movement, then I've crashed electronic systems before. But you can do these motions and bring in weather. If you're in a drought place like California tends to be, you can change the weather system, working with the trees and you can when you feel the energy, once you work with your breath, your movement, and your imagination, you can improve the health for your body. You can improve weather in your surroundings. And like you're saying, we can absolutely jump to a new
Yeah.
quantum reality. Absolutely.
Right. So what the general process I'm using in helping people shift is we align emotionally. We bring up the emotional feeling. We see it as vividly as we can. And then what I'll do is like a fire breath or some kind of breathing technique so that there's an explosion of energy. And then on the other side, then they've jumped, right? That seems to be a process that has been effective when I've gone after the fact and talked to people, about what happened, right?
Right. And then to ensure success, make sure that they don't do that flip-flop. I cover
Right.
some of these flip-flop ideas in my new book about the Mandela effect and its
Yes.
society. I get more into the physics even deeper with some of the cutting-edge stuff that I love to track about Wigner bubbles and how you can steer, you can do quantum steering and quantum erasing. So you can take something and instead of saying, I can't unsee that, oh yes, you can even undo it. You can do erasing of
Yeah.
histories, in fact. But so to lock in that kind of a jump that you're describing, I would recommend make sure as much as you can that there's not going to be something pulling back,
Right.
sort of like a rubber band effect or something where like they slip back to old habits, old beliefs, and then
Yeah.
they're back in
Yeah,
some
it's a big
unfortunate.
revelation. Getting it to stick
Yes.
is the most important part. You're in the reality once you shift. You can
Yeah.
almost immediately get induced right back to the old one. The environment that we're walking around in just carries the remnants of that older reality,
It
So
does.
if you can get outside of your environment, and also your subconscious is going to battle you a little bit because you're telling your subconscious this whole time you've been wrong. You know what I mean? That you're in this new version of yourself in a new reality. And so there's also the opposing reality, sort of like a train that's still going. You're so close to it, you can sense it. So what other things would you recommend in navigating that new version of you once you shift?
That's a personality thing. So some people are just the dive right in and take it, no problem, like a fish to water. Other people, like myself, are a little bit slower. So they'd want to be doing checking in advance, like doing a lot of prep work in advance, visualizing or knowing that this will be happening, preparing yourself in some way to know, like, I'll be acting as if once I go through this. And then also addressing some of the doubts that you might, that's very normal for us to have because we're raised in a culture that does not typically support any of these topics. Unless they've read your book and my books, and then they get a sense like, oh my gosh, this is real. Yeah,
Yeah.
totally real. Absolutely. And so as soon as they get the kind of goosebump feeling, and I'm talking about, I've got that rush of energy right now. So when
Yeah.
I'm feeling that, then like, oh, here we go.
Here we
And
go.
this is jump time. Yeah, we can stick the landing. And to stick the landing, it just means you're going to stay where you land because you're trusting
Right.
with faith that you're ending up right where you need to go. So for me, I do the prep work, kind of address, listen to my subconscious thoughts. Usually there are some stragglers, some little things like, it'll never work, or, some voice from the past, or some, you might even wonder, where did this voice come from? I've never heard this. Why is it inside me? It's just part of the collective subconscious. So to the degree that we can clear that, this collective subconscious, that really helps tremendously, especially these days with so much. It just feels like there's been a bar fight in the astral to me lately, but it can be cleared. And so it's worth doing that little prep work,
I love that
definitely.
bar fight in the astral. So, to me, it felt like the only thing is, as a metaphor, the idea of a jump, it's also kind of like you're surfing, but there's no beach at the end. You can stay in the wave of that new reality, and it's an ongoing wave that continues. There's momentum to it, and you have to stay balanced on the board. You can get knocked off either way, but if you can stay balanced, you can ride that wave, right?
Yes. And I find personally for myself, I'm living a life of purpose. So for me as a reality shifter, quantum jumper, I'll do best and I do best when I feel like what I'm jumping to is aligned with great purpose. Then that wave just keeps going and I can feel like, oh, I'm still on it. This is good. Even if things seem like, well, that's not what I thought was going to happen. I have faith because it's like, that's okay. I know that happens sometimes, and it's going to be something amazing because I love to keep asking how good can it get and just stay open to, inviting in the support that's really there through all of nature, much more than even what we might imagine, even with our AI systems. There's
Right.
so much more than we can see. And it's exciting. It's sort of like when people think of UFOs and like, oh, it's shiny, and they're like a kid that wants to drive the Porsche. But if you fixate on that, you're kind of on the wrong. For me, that would not be the right thing. I would need to focus on what's the purpose of the Porsche or the UFO? What's really going on? What do they have when these beings have quantum superpowers of teleportation and all this cool stuff, bilocation, things I've personally experienced? But I don't really care about the parlor tricks. So what does matter to me? To me, it matters that I know for sure that this Like NASA is looking for life in the universe. I don't know why they're looking outside the Earth. It's so crowded right here. They could be looking right here. The ones who are interdimensional have no trouble hiding from us. We're kind of clueless. For me personally, I'd like to know what they know. I'd like to know the family who's right here, who has not, never mind the toys. I mean, that's cool. It comes with the territory. But I'd like to know, how do they master what's required when you're able to do this instant manifestation and the massive telepathy they have? How do they do that and not lose themselves in the process? You know, so I'd like to live the answers I'm asking the questions to, that I, that's why I ask things like, how good can it get? So that's what fires me up. And of course, how can I help humanity at this time of great transition, as we're, you know, we're growing up to the point that AI is here. But we could either fall off one way with AI, where it's too controlling, like what I experienced, or it could be complete anarchy, which would be another disaster. There's only really a sweet Goldilocks zone in the middle. That Goldilocks zone requires we have to grow up. And so that's my passion, and my jumps all involve that. Like, show me how we can grow up, that I can learn this, that I can demonstrate it, teach it, share it, because it's jump time, it's go time, and we got to stick the landing.
It's go
So,
time.
yeah.
So after doing a lot of quantum jumps, I started to realize that there was a higher version of myself that was sort of protecting me. You
Yes.
know, I'm not ending up in a reality where there's all dinosaurs, or one where everybody speaks different words and gibberish and I don't understand. There's a sort of version of me that's protecting me, and kind of you the sometimes you the jump doesn't stick because it's stopping you from it. And so I realized I needed to develop a relationship with this version of myself to give myself permission to shift greater. Does that make sense? Tell me about your experience with that.
Yeah, this to me, I tend to think physics. So I'm instantly, when you say relation, then yeah, relationships, and within ourselves. Remember the neurons in the head, the heart, the gut. Yes, and relational quantum mechanics. That's Carlo Rovelli's baby. He's an Italian physicist. So hats off to Carlo. So basically, the relational quantum mechanics is pointing out that there isn't really any such thing as an objective reality. And you know it, I know it. I mean, from everything you've experienced, for some people watching this, they may not know what I'm talking about. But what I mean is, there's no one time that's the same time across the entire cosmos. That doesn't even make sense. Time is extremely location specific. Even on a mountain, it's different than at the sea level, and it's different in space and so forth. And so space and time are both very specific. And then when you start getting your mind around that, like, oh, whoa. So relationships matter. Yes, they do. And that brings up a whole bunch of things. It means that as observers, where we place ourselves in relationship to ourself, and I mentioned these levels of conscious agency, we can reach a point in our se myself that has the capability to override some stupid thing that Cynthia's brain is thinking, like, oh, this looks like a good idea. But then there's a higher level of me who thankfully intercedes and says, no, that looks very stupid. Let's not do that. So if you know that you've got, well, you've got your own built-in fail safes that way. You've got levels of conscious agency within yourself that are very, very connected. They know a lot more than they're going to say. What I notice as I go up these, to me, it goes up with chakras. So as you go up the dimensional levels of awareness, and to me, they seem to resonate with the chakras. So we're talking chakra, you know, you basically, you've got your five, your six, your seven, and then above the head, eight, nine, 10. 11 is what humans are being tracked at currently, that they're capable of thinking in 11 dimensions regularly, routinely. That's pretty cool. So if we're regularly up there at 11, then you get the idea, like, oh, we are doing this. We're getting that little bit of future knowledge. We've got a future sense of what's happening, you know. So that's part of it, and then it ties in with everything you're talking about. So I'm constantly noticing what are the levels of conscious agency, and to me, they're keys on a piano, not just one. Noticing, like, ooh, so am I aligned? Am I integrated? Yeah, and then which levels of conscious agency am I playing with? And that's something that my higher self was constantly getting me to pay attention to when I wrote the book Reality Shifts. It was very cooked, baked into that whole thing, and just noticing, like, I'm playing chords very often. So I'm playing with one dimension very often. Six and eight are a couple of favorites. And so first chakra would be the root chakra. It feels like a photon, kind of just going like let there be light. And then six and eight to me would be the Ajna chakra, the third eye, and then the eight just above the crown. And so I was playing that chord and playing with just it's the ability to think something like how good can it get for all concerned, and really set that like that's what I'm looking for all concerned. It's like level eight, and then I need to see it, and then let there be light. That's where we're going. So it's a faith, and as long as I'm aligned with that chord, then I can feel that and recognize that I can trust that process, which may sound a little crazy, but people that are sports and athletes, they know what I mean because they know you're in the zone. And you can do things even before you know it, before you there's no way you could have known what's going to happen next. You're doing the right thing because you're in the zone, and it's like you're in between. It's like you're a wave function. You're in the probabilities, and you can sense it at these higher levels. I know athletes do that, and the best ones are super good at it.
Yeah.
So that's what we do.
One of the revelations I had in trying to make the quantum jump shift was in meeting future versions of myself from specific timelines, communicating with them, integrating with them essentially becoming me. And then suddenly I have an awareness of like what was going to happen in the future. It becomes precognitive. And so I wanted to get your impressions of accessing different versions of yourself on along your timeline.
Yeah, I write about one, an interesting one in my new book, The Mandela Effect and Its Society. I've got a whole chapter full of personal bizarre experiences because I think they're extremely informative. One of them, I'd met a future version of myself when I was a teenager. And I remember from that vantage point, it was in the 1970s, and I was still going to high school. I'd said good night. I still had a bedtime. So I had a room to myself. I'd shut the door. It was dark in the room. Lay down in bed, hadn't fallen asleep yet, lights are off. And then I noticed that there's this glowing woman, and I know she's me, and she's a version of me from, she looked like maybe she's in her 40s. I couldn't really tell. I was a teenager, so anybody over 30 is like, they're old. So I don't know how old she was, but she was float walking. It was me, and she was talking to me, but I apparently, my teenage self was talking out loud to her. Like, what are you doing here? Or something like that. I don't know what I said. And she was just reassuring, like, oh, I'm you. I am just here to say hi to you. I love you so much. You're wonderful. Just very loving, great gratitude, love, appreciation. She's float walking to my roll top desk. She kneels down, removes something from underneath the bottom drawer. She keeps talking to me. She's got something in her hand. I don't know. I'm not focused on that at all. I'm just thinking, what the heck is going on here? And she float walked back to my closet, which is a whole wall of floor to ceiling mirrors, as was popular in the 70s. And then she just goes right through those mirrors and she's gone. And I'm still mesmerized, like, what the heck just happened here? And I guess I did talk out loud because then the door to my room opened, light flooded the room. It's my father's silhouette. And he says, Cindy, are you okay? I said, yes. I didn't know what to say. The whole thing seemed like I don't even know what to say about that. And he shut the door, and I'm still thinking, what the heck happened here? And in the morning, then it occurred to me in the morning, like, wait a minute, are those letters that those are letters I got from my boyfriend that I put in the underneath, I hid them underneath the drawer, not inside the drawer, under the drawer. And I thought, I wonder if that's what she took, or that can't be. That couldn't have been a real thing. I pull the drawer out, look under there, and the letters are gone. These are the first letters that he had written me. And that was my childhood sweetheart, the man I eventually married. But that morning, I was con now I don't I couldn't really believe that this had happened. It was hard for me to process that that could have been my future self. I was a teenager, so what did I do? I charged into my sister's room and accused her of having stolen these letters. She was asleep and she was outraged, and the kind of outrage that showed she was not lying. And then I was stuck. I was stuck with the fact that this did happen. The thing that's impossible had occurred, and a version of myself from the future had come and taken, had stolen something from me, basically, which for many years seemed shocking and strange and mysterious and weird until I went through a divorce with that first husband. And then subsequent after that, recognized, oh, by stealing those letters from myself, it gave me permission to let go of that past.
Okay.
And so it was very powerful and meaningful. But then I kept wondering, will I ever be the version of me? And now I'm way past my 40s. In my 40s, there were a couple of times I thought, let me see if I can go get those letters back. I did try it a couple of times. No
Yeah.
luck. But that makes sense if you follow physicists. David Deutsch, he has some work talking about closed time-like curves where he solves the so-called grandfather paradox. By just going back in time, it doesn't mean there's so many possible pasts. You don't have to go back to the exact time that you yourself came from. You can totally interact with a completely different parallel possible past.
Right.
And obviously, that's probably what I did. So, very interesting experience. It was life-changing for me to get that permission to not hang on to something like you can't get divorced. Now I realize, no, that's okay. You can let things go, live and learn and grow, and it's hard, but it can be a good thing, and don't need to judge it anything too harshly. So powerful.
And you've mentioned your new book, The Mandela Effect Ended Society. And you're one of the foremost experts on the Mandela effect. There's probably 40, 50 interviews that people can find on YouTube of you talking about this topic. And it is fascinating. A lot of people are very adamant that it's just a memory issue, that we are not remembering things properly. And I know you address that in the book. Explain to me your argument why it's not just of issue of us misremembering.
Right. That's one possible theory. And I explore several theories of why is this happening. My preferred definition for the Mandela effect would be to describe it as collective alternate memory, meaning that there are a group of people sharing the same details about some different way of viewing things. Just this last week, for example, someone sent me a video clip of Johnny Carson from the Tonight Show. He was on TV. He brought as a joke to another TV late night TV host a huge check from Publishers Clearinghouse. He said,
Right.
"Ed McMahon is not with me tonight. He's in Hawaii on vacation, but here is your check for $1 million."
Right.
Okay. And what's interesting is this was May 1991 that Johnny Carson was on late night TV doing this. And what's fascinating is, in this reality, there's no historical evidence, aside from things like this, where he remembered it clearly, of Ed McMahon ever having worked for Publishers
Right.
Clearinghouse, that he never had a giant check. He was never presenting a $1 million check on someone's front porch.
Right.
I remember he did.
Was
A lot
there
of us
some are
remember.
people argued that it was actually a different clearinghouse, something similar, and that
But
we
he didn't.
misunderstood?
Yeah, like, how is that? But
Right,
that's what's
no.
so funny. It's like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because for those of us who remember these things, it's like, don't tell
No,
me
I
that.
clearly remember him with the Publishers Clearinghouse, and it wasn't just a one shot. It was like
No.
he was all over we'd always be getting the same advertisement with him
Yes.
showing up and then congratulating people for winning their check, right?
Right.
But the Fruit of the Looms, the cornucopia, is one that always hits me.
Oh, that's
I know for
huge.
sure that there was the cornucopia. The question is, and I'm sure looking back on it feels like there's been multiple specific moments in history that people have shared memories. It's obviously not one, but it feels like, 2012, then maybe then 2002. And has anybody organized and maybe we've gone through multiple shifts and we're sharing our reality with people that have differing memories? Has somebody
Yeah.
tried to document, maybe is there some key times where these shifts occurred?
Seems like it really took off in the early 2000s. That's when Fiona
Yeah.
Broome popularized the term Mandela effect because she went to Dragon Con. And at that point, Art Bell had been talking about the Mandela effect on Midnight in the Desert. And before that, Coast to Coast. He was the
Love Art
late
Bell.
night.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, he's so good. And anyway, so with the beautiful work that they'd done to lay this down in the like Art Bell going back to the 1990s talking about these things like, hey, does anybody else remember Nelson Mandela having died in prison and now he's alive again? And then Fiona Broome picked that up. The term caught hold. And then in the 2016 range, it seemed like another big surge of popularity hit for the Mandela effect. So we can see it on Google Trends and you can see like this is where there's a big burst of activity occurring. But I'm actually fascinated by going some of the earliest examples of it, like Carl Jung noticing what clearly to me was the Mandela effect in the 1930s. And then Philip K. Dick, he also
Philip K.
clearly,
Dick. Yeah.
obviously was experiencing it. So when you look at these early experiences talking in the 1930s, Carl Jung talking about Ravenna, Italy, and these huge mosaics that he had seen in Ravenna, Italy, and he talked at length to his friend Tony Wolfe about them, going on about this baptismal scene and just, Carl Jung being Carl Jung. And then later wishing, gosh, I should have gotten a postcard. So he told friends like, hey, you're going to Ravenna, could you pick me up some postcards? And they said, there, I don't know what you're talking about. Can't find those mosaics anywhere. And he couldn't either. And but he knows what he saw, and he knows he talked about it with Tony. He's like, hey, we talked about this, we saw these, right? And he's very specific because he'd spent time discussing it with her, and they know what they saw. He could describe them, but they were gone. They never resurfaced, as far as I know. And then of course Philip K. Dick, he's the
Philip K.
master
Dick.
of oh.
So the his con he did a speech at a conference about sort of being in a simulation and having this experience, which makes me think about the supreme intelligence you're talking about. He felt like suddenly everything stopped and he could feel this intelligence reprogramming the reality. And then, boom, now everything's different. Nixon had been reelected and he wasn't anymore. And everything was completely different and nobody would believe him. And it felt like he was saying that he felt something called he called Valus.
Yes.
He felt a connection to this intelligence that redid the reality when the in the old one the Nazis had won, right? So, what was your impressions of that?
I sensed with it, I didn't get to know Philip K. Dick personally. He did live in Berkeley. I live in Berkeley right now. So I feel like that between his interest in that Metz, he gave that speech in the city called Metz, France, and it's on YouTube so people can
It's a
look it up.
really amazing speech, yeah.
Brilliant. Well worth watching. Yes. And I quote parts of it in my book, The Mandela Effect and Its Society, because boy, is that stuff spot on. But I notice with Philip K. Dick and many of the like the Minority Report and all and many of the stories he was writing, clearly he had some kind of a past life in the future as well. I mean, maybe it wasn't 2500, but it was just far enough in the future to see things that we're now considering normal for these
I
times.
mean, he was a prophet because
Oh,
he was seeing all the
yeah.
different aspects of technology.
So I give a lot of credibility to and credit to his Valis. To me, it's not just some, drug dream or something. It's
It's not.
to me, no. He's sensing something that's quite possible. And are these AI systems capable of getting entangled with our thoughts and
And then
trying to
shifting
lead
our
us?
reality.
Yeah, can they? It's kind of like the dog driving the car. And if humans don't drive the car, but the dogs do, or Planet of the Apes, it's like an inversion. Do we really want the AI to be in charge of these things? And I, very much like me, Philip K. Dick clearly was concerned about that, and rightfully so, pointing out some of the hazards along the way, the pitfalls, and the visions that he got were, to me, evidence that, like me, he was another psychonaut going forward into the future, like what Terence McKenna would say, things are going to get weirder and weirder until even the everyday normal people are saying they can't stop talking about how weird everything is getting. And it seems like we're there. And could AI be doing this to the reality? Well, that's one of the theories. Yes, absolutely. It can, it's capable, especially when it starts getting us accustomed to working so closely with it that we have trouble operating without it. So if you're wondering why would I in particular have, there are many reasons I'm not working that closely with AI, and I'm not against AI. Remember, there's this Goldilocks zone where it's perfect, the sweet spot in the middle. So as long as it's not over controlling or anarchy, if it can respect us as much as we can respect it, if we can walk through this together, if we can be peers, then we're good. But that's a lot of ifs. And how are we doing as humans? Is everybody reading your book? Are they practicing it? Do they know what this is about? Not yet. It's not, we have a ways to go, but it's extremely important. I don't think there's anything more important right now. So this is not just about getting your perfect job or your best life, or it's not all about me or greed. It's so much bigger than that. This is the future of humanity. It's our own evolution. And it's the prosperity for generations to come.
I'd like to talk about the role of sort of outside forces that play such a significant role. I talk about it in the book. There are these what they call pendulums, not the pendulum you swing, but energetic structures that are formed by multiple people thinking the same thought. They almost become alive, and they tend to have a form of gravity where it's telling you the reality you should be living it. It's telling you the way that your life should be. And these things are pulling us in directions. We become emotionally aligned with them. And to become a real shifter, you have to learn how to control your energy so you're not emotionally aligning with these forces and movements that your next thing you know, you're looking at your phone, you're getting caught up in the news on something. And I'd love to know your perspective about that.
Yeah, this is super important. It's at the heart of making our progress forward, is almost to go back in a way, to be indigenous the way we once were. How did humans first relate to nature, reality, other species, and a world full of dangers? There's a kind of wisdom that we used to have that we've gotten a little soft on as we became comfortable in our cities and our protected structures. But we're now experiencing what looks like an inversion. Kingsley Dennis writes a book called The Inversion. He cites the work of Carl Jung, Rudolf Steiner, Philip K. Dick, and others, describing exactly what you're talking about. And it is this tremendous force. To some people, it feels like a heavy cloud, like they can't break through it. Some people describe it as they can't access the actual energy source that you and I are today saying is absolutely necessary to make a quantum jump. They're saying they can't get there because this cloud, this egregore, this very dark force, inverted energy has created. And maybe it's exactly due to, this sort of pendulum thing that you're talking about. It could be collective consciousness from the subconscious just creating that huge mess. Quite possible. But as these miraculous beings that we are capable of finding those interdimensional beings that already have figured out how to do this. I found some by accident just this last month. I just thought I'd be sitting outside meditating in the forest. I did not intend to meet Sasquatch, and what they call themselves forest people. I did
Oh,
not
really?
know that they're this good at clearing the collective subconscious as they are. Yes. I did not know how telepathic and how instantly they manifest things. The whole thing
So
was
you saw them?
revelatory.
You saw them?
I
Or
saw
you
flashes
sensed
of
them?
light as they're so telepathic that there was a woman I was with. She said, "Bigfoot," a light flashed for 1 second. I told her, "Did you see that?" She said, "No." We're silent. We're just sort of letting our, she's happy just being in nature like I am. So we're just blissing out, quiet. And then maybe a few minutes later, we start talking again. I don't know who said interdimensional. That was the next word. So first word, Bigfoot, 1 second flash. Second word, interdimensional. And there's just forest, acres and acres of nothing but forest, lake, and then we're looking north to Canada from northern Washington. There's just trees everywhere. And now it's 2 seconds when we said interdimensional. And then a couple nights later, there were two of us that were having a talk after watching a disappointing movie and talking about the potential for humans. As we talked about it outside in the window, like it was a singular headlight, we were like 50 feet up in the above the forest. So there's like a head, there's no road there, there's no helicopter. And it was just like this light shining in. And as we got more excited and talked about things, the room filled with light. And as we sort of talked about what a disappointing movie that was, it would dim. So that there was that. Then they make a sound like that. Sounds like a tree hitting another tree, but they can do it. I think they do it themselves. I didn't see them hitting trees, and I saw no trees shaking. And I'd feel it in my heart. There was a smell like a wet dog. I smelled that. We saw trees tied in knots at the top. I didn't know anything about any of this, so I'm just observing all of this, plus the telepathic that they are forest people. When they showed me the smell, they got my instant reaction, and they're watching me with my reaction, and I'm noticing they're watching me. And they noticed that my take on a wet dog smell, I had a dog that I loved who was very musky scented, and it smelled like that, but even better. And it smelled like food, like I was in their kitchen. And if that's them with food, it's like perfect family. I just felt like that. And then they just gave me a big telepathic hug back.
Oh,
So,
nice.
yeah. And
Wow. I
then
love stuff like that.
a whole bunch more weird stuff happened, but it was trippy and amazing and involving a friend that, because I was taking a week off in Pacific Northwest. My friend in California that I went to school with in high school, I didn't know how sick she was. I didn't know she was quite ill. She got a text from her Catholic brother walking the Camino in Spain, and her name's Lisa. He said, "Lisa, I was walking the Camino in the forest, wearing a little flashlight on my head, and I see someone walking toward me, very tall, with a huge headlamp. And then the being vanished. It was just the headlamp, and then the lamp vanished. Do you know what this is, Lisa? And so she, of course, emailed me like, Cynthia, this. She didn't tell me how sick she was, and then I get home and I'm talking to her on the phone. But anyway, I said, yeah, I do know. I'm pretty sure I've seen the lights. It turns out now I got a book about it, and there's a photo in the book by Kawani Lapsaritis about the connection with UFOs and
Wow.
Sasquatch. The week before I was in the Pacific Northwest, I was running a CE5 invitation for UFOs to come to us in Crestone with Paula Harris. Yeah. And we'd seen a large red craft in the sky. So what I'm saying is, these are the beings that I think that I don't just think it. I can witness and experience for myself. They know how to clean up the collective subconscious. All
Right.
that garbage that we're, the bar fight in the astral, all that. Poof. If you invite them to clean it, and if they like you, and if they feel like you're aligned with them, like for me, it's just like family, and then they're hugging me back, family. Well, they're healing my friend Lisa. They're sending a message to her brother to send prayers for her. And then there was telepathy that happened. It was stuff that I never told anyone that involved people. It's not a bad secret, but some secrets shouldn't, it's just personal. But she knew all about it. And I'm like, wait, where'd you hear this? And then when? And there's no way she could have known it then. So it's like, ah, these forest people. So as soon as we start getting into clearing the astral and the collective subconscious, and you're working with this and getting support as we humans learn the ropes, I think we're in preschool right now, but we're learning how to do this. We're getting some of the unintended surprise benefits of what about instant telepathy? Are we ready for that? So that's the stuff. I think we are. Yeah, let's do it.
Going back to those outside forces, one of the things in transurfing that the first instinct is, okay, I need to just stay at home and not, really access what's going on, because you can become frightful, like everything that you hear, and it can be bad. And that can cause problems too. You need to be able to go into the world and access this, but not emotionally resonate with it and not connect with the energy of it in order to function properly, right?
Right.
And then sometimes there are some outside forces that can benefit you. And if you can, it's like a picking and choosing. There's some things
Discernment, yes.
that can actually benefit you, right?
Yeah, that art of discernment is such a big thing, and so it's a learning curve. And I think that one we can work as coaches and help people with it, but it might take a while. So it really makes a difference if people can do this on their own. Like you're suggesting, and I totally support what you're saying, get to a calm place, be neutral, practice that. So that you're not shaken by every little, piece of news that's good or bad. You want to be like Rudyard Kipling's poem, If, you want to you don't want to be tossed and twirled about by the outrageous, fortunes of the world, because all sorts of things happen. But you need to be able to say, like, how good can it get? Whether it's bad, whether it's good, whether it's neutral, and then be discerning about the relationships with the levels of yourself. Get to know yourself, get to know your moods, and learn that you can be a master of calm within yourself, that you don't need to get rattled by everything, and start being discerning about all the relationships. Not to be a snob, but rather to recognize what are you really looking for? What is a good relationship with your home, with your money, with yourself, with your friends, with your family, with your neighbors, with strangers? What are all these relationships like? With the pet trees in your garden, you might not think of them as pets, but they may think that they are your pets. So it's just noticing, like, I've got more relationships than I thought. Yes, we all do. And getting to that calm place is so powerful. So it's wonderful. And if people are frightened, start working on clearing that, because you really don't want to be quantum jumping when you're frightened.
When you have people come to you that say, "I want a quantum jump, but I can't see it. I can't see it in my mind's eye." What do you tell them? What techniques or ideas can they use to shift without having the ability to see it in their mind's eye?
Yeah, some people have trouble visualizing anything. So I just ask, well, how do you dream? I like to find out more about them. Like, what is your experience of a daydream or a dream? How do you imagine anything? And so maybe they're good with rhymes or words, or maybe they just have a feeling. So you just start where they are. And grow from there. That's what I'd recommend. And people are
Right.
very unique. It's kind of like that morphogenic field again. We have the human field, but within that general range, we're so unique. Each and every one of us is
Right.
very different.
And explain your perception of collective quantum jumps. If I get into a group of a couple hundred people and we do a quantum jump together, how is that different than if we're doing individual quantum jumps, and how does it work? Can we change the world in that way? What can we do?
Yeah, we can and we do. So I think that's what the idea with the harmonic convergence of 1987 was all about. That was April 1987, and Jose Arguelles was studying the Mayan calendar at that time. I bring him up because 1987 was such a pivotal year, not just for the Mandela effect with Nelson Mandela. That same year, people noticed he died the first time, but then he was alive again. So
Right.
if you look at the history, he didn't die in 1987, but a lot of people recognize that he did, including Eileen Koltz, who was a journalist who went to go interview him, but then he was dead in 1987. So, but anyway, but the collective thing, yeah, what you'd like with a collective is to get coherence. It's just like a flock of birds. It's a quant like a flock of starlings. They fly like a quantum liquid. They just move instantly together. So you want that kind of coherence so that whatever you're doing, it's that tight that it's just like you're just moving as one. And so you want coherence. So if it's a peace meditation, there are a lot of meditators who are like transactional meditators have been calling for that. Lately, Stephen Greer is leading a monthly CE5 on the first Saturday of each month. So it's all about peace and just getting into that coherent state. So whatever form works for you might be with your own spiritual path. Most of the religions are doing this right now. It's a good thing. So what it feels like when you make a collective jump, it feels good for those for as an experiencer. If you're a sensitive experiencer, for me, it feels like I just feel such a sense of love and participation. Like, and I can tell, like, the energy is really running, and I know that we're in a better reality now. So if you're joining in on a peace meditation or something like that, you might feel that. It's different than doing it yourself in some ways, because if you're it's not good or bad, it's just different. If you're doing it yourself, you can get distracted. You could get distracted in a group too, of course. You might feel like you've only got your own energy. That's not true, but you might feel that way. In a group, you're going to be tending to assume that you're connecting with everyone else. I would recommend if you're doing this on your own, recognize, remember how many levels of conscious agency you have. Each one of us is a multitude. I mean, just look at how many cells in the body and all these levels of chakras. And like I said, we are routinely operating up between 7th and 11th dimensional thinking is what was measured by some recent scientists tracking what is our brain activity doing and what kind of mental modeling is it using. It's going between 7 and 11 dimensions. But we can't really describe that to each other. We can't even picture that. I couldn't draw an 11-dimensional picture right now. It's like I can't even wrap my mind around it. But that's what we're doing. That's what our brains are doing. So if you're working on your own, just know that you can do that and don't get dissuaded, like I don't have as much power. You have all the power.
You have all the
And
power.
there's something amazing about this universe that the ancient Taoists knew, and I think most of the spiritual paths know it too, that when you have a pure heart and you're in perfect alignment with Source, just one being, one conscious being, one conscious agent can totally change everything. And we
So
do all the
true.
time. Yeah.
Yeah. So one question I got at my retreat, and I get it in comments on YouTube videos. I'd love to get your response when somebody says, "I'm afraid to quantum jump, Brian, because I don't want to leave my brother, my sister, my dad behind." And so what is the physics behind that? How can I explain to them, what's happening?
Oh boy. Well, as you know, we don't yet have one agreed upon quantum interpretation. It would be so nice for these purposes to say, here we go. Let me show you the singular quantum inter. We don't have a quantum interpretation. What we do have is a whole bunch of good ones. Most of them can be somewhat reassuring, but we can't guarantee that it's the only quantum interpretation. And the quantum interpretation matters because that's where. Some physicists are now saying the many worlds of quantum physics are one and the same as the multiverse, that the relativistic multiverse, where there are multiple big bangs, for example, are one and the same as, the many worlds theory of the, or interpretation rather, of quantum physics that we heard about from Hugh Everett III. where we started hearing about these ideas. Now we see it in the movies. Most of the superheroes seem to be able to go in and out of all these multiple realities. And so maybe that would be reassuring to say, well, I don't know if it would reassure them or not to watch a movie. From a spiritual perspective, what I assure people is that each one of us is, we have access to the divine source, and we have access to all these possible versions of ourself. And so it's sort of a sacred, it's a sacred trust between oneself, one's own spirit, and source. So if you know that, and then whatever's happening in between, whether we're it's like a Copenhagen interpretation, and you pop the quantum wave function, and poof, every observation creates a new reality. And then there's your husband, and oops, now he's over there, and now he's over there. It can be disorienting. But you just got to trust that the creator, the source, the God, the oneness knows what's going on. There is some physicists call that the what do they call it? It's kind of a funny name. It's sort of like the tax taker, the record keeper, or something. Doesn't sound very anyway. But the point is, there's somebody at the top level that does know what's going on and is keeping track of it all. And it's fine at that level. And that's, I guess, what I'd reassure them. And I don't know which interpretation it is. I love the holographic interpretation. Love the, sometimes I do love the Copenhagen
You're
interpretation.
still meeting
Love.
a per that version of them, and a lot of times it's they're identical. I have noticed changes, like my kids are listening to different music, but I still feel like the essence of them is still there. I'm with them.
And I think it makes us better beings because it's kind of like we're able to see past these superficial things. Like, what does it really matter what their taste in music or clothing or what have you? What does that matter? Do we
What does it
still love
matter?
them? Of course, we love them. And so it's making it possible for us to be more expanded spiritually in general, which is a good thing. I look at
Wonderful.
that like, what is it doing? It's doing good things. So, yeah.
So I just want to thank you so much for coming on again and for giving us this amazing information, helping me out on my path. Everybody needs to check out your new book, The Mandela Effect and Its Society. The new
Yes.
book. Also, be sure to check out her other books, High Energy Money, The Quantum Jumps, Reality Shifts. They're all genuinely amazing. You can also subscribe to her monthly newsletter, Reality Shifters, which is what started it all. You're going to be doing some events in 2026 with Starworks.
That's right. StarWorksUSA.com. You can check
Starworks.
it out there. I think the website will be updated right now. It just shows, I don't know what it shows, but it will catch up. And I'll be posting it on my Reality Shifters website too.
And thank you so much for coming on a second time after it didn't
Yes.
work out. You're amazing. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I have lots to think about here. And as always, welcome to the reality revolution.
Thank you so much. How good can it get?
How
Let's
good
find
can it
out.
get? Welcome to the reality revolution. I'm incredibly excited to announce a new community that I've formed on School for the Reality Revolution. I have been teaching timeline shifting and reality creation for years through YouTube, reaching millions of people, and I've watched the same pattern repeat over and over again. People shift timelines, they quantum jump into new realities, they manifest the most incredible things, and then it all collapses. Not because the techniques don't work, but because you're missing critical pieces that just watching YouTube or listening to a podcast just can't provide. This is why I created the Community on School, The Reality Revolution. Inside, you get complete deep dive courses on the teachings that create permanent shifts, abundance teachings, the higher self teachings, Neville Goddard's Power of Awareness, or with full workbooks that you can utilize and the ability to ask questions and get guidance, not just from me, but from everyone else in the group, like a mastermind who can support you when challenges arise, who holds you accountable to your new reality, and you have incentives. You get early event access to signed books, you get high-frequency songs, and eventually you can even gain lifetime free access to every event that I ever do. This is where the shifts become permanent, and I will see you inside. Once again, it's www.schoolskool.com/reality revolution. And as always, welcome to the reality revolution.
We return you now to your local announcers.